Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cold Feet Podcast. Join our journey as we interview people in this cold plunge and we delve on the adventure of holistic health, athletic development, barefoot education, questioning the norm, and so much more. So dive in, grab a hot cocoa, and enjoy the episode.
Before we start our podcast episode, we would like to give a brief shout out to our podcast sponsors. Most shoes harm your mobility by over-restricting your foot's natural movement. With the Ursus from Barefoot Athletics, a shoe designed with minimal restrictions, your feet can move the way nature intended, so you can move with more confidence and strength in every step. Barefoot Shoes was founded by Chris Duffin, who attributes proper foot biomechanics as foundational to his success in squatting and deadlifting over 1,000 for reps. He created Barefoot Shoes to provide a minimal shoe designed for strength athletes. Go to barefoot.shoes/TBSR to check out the Ursus, and you can save 10% with the code TBSR10 to purchase the strongest minimalist shoe available. As a gym owner, I usually lift barefoot. When I can't lift barefoot, I love lifting in my barefoot shoes for both the health benefits of lifting barefoot and the increased ground feel I have in all my lifts. You don't need supplements to build muscle, lose fat, and get healthy, but the right ones can help. That's why over 350,000 fitness folk have chosen Legion. Well, that and their 100% natural products, their clinically effective ingredients and doses, and their no-hassle money-back guarantee. I've been following Michael Matthews, the CEO of Legion Athletics, journey since 2012, and I am super duper impressed with their supplements. They have a wide variety of everything from protein powders, pre-workouts, post-workouts, omega-3s, and bundles. And you can save a whooping 20% with the discount code HABER, H-A-B-E-R. So just log in to legionathletics.com, and the discount code is HABER for 20% off. Earthrunners are some of my favorite minimalist sandals. Earthrunners were created to rewild our lives in response to the typical modern domesticated lifestyle, which is causing numerous health, psychological, and social issues. Through rewilding and grounding, we aim to bring stronger, healthier, and more resilient individuals and communities back to our society. If you're not familiar with grounding is exposing your bare feet or body to the earth beneath you. And if you're unable to do that, you can ground with sandals like Earthrunners with their unique copper plug and copper laces. Grounding has a huge display of benefits such as reducing inflammation, improving sleep, and improving happiness. So you can check out Earthrunners at earthrunners.com, and you can use our discount code of TBSR10 to get 10% off.
Excited about this live. This is actually our second attempt at trying to make this happen. Hey, Chad made it.
Hey, I'm just
already. What's up, dude? Okay. Hey, everyone. And I'm so happy this is happening because this is actually our second attempt at this ground. So we got Chad here in his workshop. And remind me your partner's name.
Oliver.
Chad and Oliver. So, Chad and Oliver, I'm really, really happy we made this happen. I believe we're in different parts of the world right now. So it's just cool that we could connect here on Instagram. And today we're going to be diving. It's going to be a podcast / IG live. We're going to be diving into barefoot performance. Now, what in the world is barefoot performance? It's something I like talking about, which combines the athletic ability of the foot, and obviously minimalist footwear ties in very, very much to that. So Chad and Oliver, if you can please introduce yourself, tell us who you are, what you do, the beautiful product you created, and we'll progress from there.
Sure. I'm Chad. Oliver, we both have our personal backgrounds of being athletes, getting to a certain point of our athleticism at a collegiate level, and then realizing that pain set in. We both went opposite directions in the fact that we both chose to have knee surgeries, thinking that would alleviate some of our pain that we were feeling. And, you know, the older we got, the more we realized it was footwear that was causing problems. For me, I went down a path of trying to get into footwear brands 15, 20 years ago, thinking I could help make better footwear that fit people's feet better. I worked with a podiatrist for a little while and tried to understand the foot, the ankle, and the biomechanics of what athletes needed, and then looked at shoes that didn't really fit people. We kind of fit our feet into these shoes. So after about four or five companies and getting into what I thought was the elite company for athletes at Nike, it wasn't really a path that they were interested in really making custom fit footwear for athletes. You know, the more we've seen different feet over the last 2 years, we've really realized how different everybody's feet are. And no 2 feet are even close to being the same, even on your own body. So I think it all the more ensures what we've been doing for the last 2 years has been the path of what we feel is just natural to do something for ourselves, to get out of pain. But all along, this is for everybody, that we want other athletes to experience what this is like to actually play in a shoe that fits your foot well. And it's a game changer. So we've been on a long path to get to where we are now. Oliver can speak for himself, but he's got a similar path and different route, but with soccer.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, we have the same kind of athletic background. We love playing our sports. He plays basketball, I'm in soccer. And I kind of went, slightly different path in terms of once I started having the knee pain and realizing it was my shoes were causing the problem. I just started cutting up my shoes, and I pretty early on was interested in 3D printing. So I've been prototyping cleats for a long time, probably going on close to a decade now. It was just like serendipitous. I met Chad, who has, more of an eye for design and also had a little more knowledge in terms of foot health and what makes a healthy shoe. And we've been working on it together for a couple of years, and we have a product now that's been tested quite a bit, and I've been playing in them. We have close to 10 testers who've been playing in the cleats. And the thing is, though, we're constantly refining, constantly improving. The foot in the human body is so complex. I feel like you're never really going to get to a point where it's like you've solved it. And I think that's what's beautiful about what we're doing, is we're just tweaking and improving and figuring out all these edge cases of different shapes of feet, different problems with feet. So, it's exciting, and we're happy to be here with you, Sean, to kind of share what's going on.
Did you go on mute, Sean?
I was making sure I was not giving any background noise. So, Chad, you were saying that you worked at Nike for many years. Is that correct?
I was there for 6 years. I was with the Jordan brand doing lifestyle and basketball. And then after I tried pitching more of a elite level custom fit that was going to be better for some of these athletes, I was looking at NBA basketball players that had feet that weren't fitting their shoes. And the more I saw that, the more I kind of made cases to help these guys out, but the more it seemed like it went on deaf ears. So kitchen with their footwear team and see how their process worked, and looking at athletes, and it just all the more solidified, I think, my thinking that these problems would come from athletes. And I'm not gonna say all the time, but a lot of times the solution was just additive. Like, let's add some carbon fiber to stiffen the shoe up. Let's add some cushion so he doesn't feel or she doesn't feel that pain anymore. And we never really looked at the root of the problem of why these people had hammer toes and why they had gnarled up toes and why they had heel pains. And it was just quick response work. And so at that point, I was able to make a custom fit pair of shoes for myself while working in Nike's innovation side. And I finally got to feel what it was like to have a wide toe box, slim heel, minimal shoe that I could go play on a basketball court with. It wasn't a perfect basketball shoe, but it was that aha moment of, this is what I've been looking for. This is what I've been needing. I've been cutting up shoes and testing shoes, for 20 years, looking for something that fit me right, and nothing ever quite did. It's like the more I worked on my own foot health and got a healthier toe splay, the more shoes felt uncomfortable. And, mainly while working at Nike, a lot of those toe box shapes were the same. So I hit a break point where I just quit. I just didn't want to deal with it anymore. I wasn't advancing my own career, and I wasn't helping athletes out. And to me, I was just like, I lost interest. Even though I had worked 15 plus years to get to that point, to me, that was like the point that I always wanted to be at to help athletes, but I wasn't doing so. So I quit out of frustration, really, and I spent like a year or two going into the apparel world, and then coincidentally met Oliver when I was getting my fire lit back underneath me. When I started making custom shoes, but like in an old school way, like moccasins, pulling leather over a shape that was a little bit better, and making shoes for my family and my kids. My kid was getting a hammer toe at like age 3 from a pair of shoes that we thought were wide toe box. And it was just part of the process, I guess.
So when you were pitching Nike this concept of custom fit, were you putting in like the barefoot world? Like, hey, let's make a minimalist style shoe, or was it, let's just call it the taboo word? Because I'm assuming that many big brands are not so open to that idea. Otherwise, it would probably exist more.
Correct. No, I think I challenged the status quo more than the average designer did. I was looking at their lasts, the shapes that we were building shoes around, and there was always a higher heel. There was always a slimmer toe box. And these two things I was always trying to like adjust. But to be able to adjust that one little thing, say less heel height, now your whole pattern on the upper of the shoe is going to be changed. And if you're making hundreds of thousands of pairs of shoes a month on that one shape that sucks, just making a little change to that shape affects the whole line of shoes. So those little things that I thought would make better fitting shoes for athletes wasn't in their business plan. It was too much excess work to look at a whole new approach to how the shoe is going to fit. It's like, if the wheel's not broken, don't fix it. And that's kind of what it always came back to me as. Maybe we're breaking
through. I mean, this is a very classic, I think, Western medicine approach. Like, just because we've been doing something for 30 to 40 to even hundreds of years, it doesn't mean that it's the right way. And the second a person comes and questions the norm, questions what people are doing, they're like, not going to do it. But my curiosity is, I think Nike and Adidas and Under Armour have heard the uproar. Like, barefoot shoes and minimalist footwear are big enough and famous at this point for them to realize that while they're not necessarily competing with brands like Vivo Barefoot or Zero and similar, why don't they just change, like, one thing, their toe box or the drop in the shoe? Like what you said before about that it would take too much time to manufacture like new lasts for everything. Like, what's stopping them from creating a barefoot line, like what Nike tried to do, which wasn't really a barefoot shoe, or what Merrell has, you know, the vapor gloves?
Honestly, when they tried doing Nike Free initially, it was all about barefoot. It was studying people who were training barefoot, and they had the perfect approach. The problem is that company, I'm just speaking towards Nike from my experience, it's driven by marketing money. That's where most of their budget comes from. And when that happens, you get a marketing team that ends up getting to make like the final decision on what the footwear is. So even though the Nike Free originally was flat, flexible, it had most of the great characteristics of a minimal shoe, and this was like 2004 or 2005, it's a marketing team that will end up saying, yeah, but people aren't going to be used to that from us. They're used to having big airbags and big this. So let's just raise the heel back up a little bit, put a little bit more of that familiar toe box, and then more people will buy the shoes. Even though the whole design team and the innovation team's like, whoa, no, that fights everything we've been doing. It didn't really make a difference. And that's kind of, they did a hyper feel shoe about 10 years ago too, which was supposed to be like a minimal scrunch up shoe. But it ends up getting the tapered toe box back into it. It's all just the familiar things that people, they think, want to see in order to sell more shoes. It all just comes down to what's going to sell more shoes. I think a minimal shoe and let it live on its own, in my opinion, that almost fights everything else that they do. If they promote something that's really good and healthy and wide and low to the ground, does that make everything else look bad?
So I think two dilemmas that I've come across that are similar to that one is, number one, when I give corporate workshops to companies that are trying to retail barefoot shoes, so I tell them, look, man or woman, you're going to have Hokas and other Cloud Marshmallow shoes on the shelf, but you're going to be telling this client, I'm in the coaching world. You're going to be telling this person, this buyer, that these are the best shoe for you, but let's say Zero shoes, which is the corporate company I'm speaking about. But then a second later, you'll be telling the next guy who walks in, hey, no, Hoka shoes are great for you because they have a great cushion. So it's kind of a contradiction. And perhaps that's a fear of Nike and the bigger brands, that the second they market the minimalist shoe or the barefoot shoe as the ultimatum, that it, I don't know if it would reduce sales, but it's kind of contradicting what they've been promoting all along. Does that make sense?
I agree. Yeah.
The second thing is that there's companies companies out there like Merrell, you know, which make the Vapor Glove, but they still make clunky hiking shoes. So how does that work? Like, they're promoting two things. One's good for you, one's not, but it's working. So, or other big brands from doing similar.
Yeah, it's having a lot of managers that manage different categories.
Are you saying that the bigger, like, another flaw I see is that a lot of times the marketing managers, like the company that I don't work for them, but a big shoe importer here in Israel brought in Zero shoes to all their stores around Israel, and they brought them in as the, not just the retailers, but as the wholesalers. So they're bringing the Zero shoes to all the different hiking stores around Israel with very little background as to what a barefoot shoe is. So they're just dumping them on the shelf with all the rest of the hiking shoes, which I think is a disaster, because if you're selling a barefoot shoe to someone who's not knowledgeable about it, they're going to come 2 days later and say, my feet hurt. And then when the salesmen and the retailers and everyone involved are not educators or not barefoot educators who don't really understand what healthy, strong feet should be, and that it's a process, and that if they sell a shoe, they should probably be sending some sort of a transitional graft for foot exercises, or if they're selling to runners, they probably should be giving some sort of adjusted running plan, teaching them to, you know, forefoot strike correctly. They're not doing that. So what I found is that all these middlemen, the people who run the Instagram, the social media, are not educators. So what you said about Nike is that the marketing team are not barefoot people. They don't know what's, they're just like, oh, people are going to like it, people are not going to like it. That's a huge dilemma I'm seeing. And I'm wondering, like, how we can resolve that. Like, what are your thoughts? Is it corporate education? Is it making the marketers trainers? Is it giving the marketers barefoot shoes? Like, what can we propose as a solution?
I mean, giving marketing people barefoot shoes would be a start. But really, that's what motivated us to do our own thing. And in light of someone coming to us with either a weak foot or a strong foot, I think that's our unique advantage of how we make shoes for people, is that we meet you where you're at your health, you know, at that moment. Like, we don't want to give you the super minimal shoe if you've been wearing heavy, clunky shoes your whole life. Like you just said, we're not trying to get people to overuse muscles that they're not ready for. So we have like five different levels of what we call foot strength that we gauge based on your height and weight, what your daily athletic movement is. Are you playing at a top tier athletic sport, or are you just a casual player? And what kind of shoes do you wear most of the day? Like, if you're wearing heavy, clunky shoes all day to walk around in, we don't expect that you're going to play well shoe right away. But if you've been wearing your minimal shoes all day, you tell us that you train barefoot, that lets us know that we can make your cleat, for instance, less stiff and have more flexibility. And so there's kind of a unique approach that we believe is necessary to educate people, is let us know who you are so we can meet you where you're at. But there's not any other shoe companies that we know that will go to that level of detail and depth to find the perfect shoe for you. But that's really what our goal is, because we know it doesn't exist in this world.
So to clarify, you're making custom just minimalist cleats, is that correct?
That's what product we have right now that's most tested, that we feel most confident about. We're also working towards a court shoe that I've been testing.
That's cool.
Sorry, say that one more time.
No, I just said that's cool.
Oh yeah. Thank you. And we're working on a lightweight trainer, maybe a knit upper, something that's just a tool that you can have throughout the day if you want to go to a lightweight train, or if you want to go to the store. We're kind of knowing that for most of the day, people aren't wearing their cleats or their basketball shoes, or at least we don't really think they are. We don't want them to. But if you can have a shoe that's flexible enough that you can walk around in, you know, like any minimal shoe, we kind of want to have that representation too. So right now it's me and Oliver. Third, I guess essentially that helps us come make stuff when we get really busy. But between these footwear products, we're also doing custom fit toe spacers. So when we see your foot scans and foot photos, we get a good idea of what you need to fit a toe spacer correctly. And we not just give you one set, we give you a set that's maybe you could wear with your toe socks, so it's a little thinner. It's going to fill up the gaps more. And if you want to wear a set barefoot that really splays you out, we also have, you know, interchangeable parts. So we understand this whole footwear situation is a journey for most people, and everybody's at a different point of their journey, and we're trying to just supply the tools that we believe you need to get back to healthier footwear and healthier feet. But a lot of it, like you said, is education. So there are people who are educated and know what they need, and they come to us. So we get a slow, steady flow of people who are buying our product at a rate that we can make it. So it's great. But we do believe it's about the education and letting people know, you know, in America, the average person has a bunion. That's like more than not. So most people believe that that's normal to have a jogged in toe and have your knuckle out. And then we're not really wanting to build shoes around a bad foot shape. We're trying to say, if that's your bad foot shape, let's correct it just a little bit over here. And here's why. And we kind of explain to people, we want to start splaying you out a little bit more. But it's interesting when you get to educate people who might not know any better, the aha moments that they get from. I saw your post earlier today of showing what you did yesterday with people. It's pretty cool to see.
So what made you go specifically to minimalist cleats? Like, even though you say that you're trying to just kind of make a shoe for everybody, what made you drive specifically to the minimalist cleat world as opposed to minimal, just, you know, another barefoot shoe company that just custom makes shoes?
I mean, I guess I could speak to that, but, you know, really it's just the development time had gone into it. And we were just further along. Like when I met Chad, I had already been prototyping the cleat for quite a long time. And yeah, so I guess the design was there. And also, as far as you know, a sports shoe goes, it's definitely one of the most used shoes on the market. I mean, it's not just soccer, it's football, it's frisbee, it's lacrosse, it's rugby. So there's tons of use cases for it. Looking back, though, I mean, it is one of the more challenging shoes to make. There are a lot of interesting challenges with making a good cleat, making it function well and durable, and then also having it be minimalist. So I think in some ways we went a little bit backwards in the sense that we chose one of the harder products to make first. But that also, I think, it's giving us a really good foundation forward with other athletic products, other athletic shoes, because we've kind of hit the mark of, wow, if we can make a cleat 3D printed and minimalist and it performs and it's durable, like, we have the formula, we have the ingredients to pretty much make any other minimalist shoe on the market, right? I mean, there are different challenges with different shoes, but I think that it sets us up well in our kind of technique to go after those other types of shoes. So yeah, I hope that kind of answered that question.
One more bit. When I met Oliver and I kind of asked him what his motivation was, and I'm not a soccer player, so I wasn't wearing cleats, but when I realized how stiff and how narrow the cleats were that he was wearing, I kind of was like, God, your toes must be jacked up and your foot's not able to function in this thing. So what Oliver realized at age 15 is that if he actually cut his stiff Adidas cleats up, it gave a little more arch flexibility, which resulted at the time, which was his better footwear out there. And it was a journey for him to start hacking up shoes and rebuilding new shoes to try to find a shoe that fit him and let him play at elite level without foot pain. I think it's all part of that journey. I was doing the same thing with basketball shoes as he was doing with soccer cleats, and it's a lot of back and forth until you find something that really fits you right. But I think we have a formula that's pretty solid now.
It sounds kind of like that you guys shot for the moon so you could fall for the stars. Like, you basically made one of the most difficult pieces of footwear. Can you hear me?
Yep.
So, like, many people plop on shoes without any concern about, like, what it does to their function. They might think more of aesthetics and elegance and respect that people will give them. I'm wearing a dress shoe, I'm wearing a sneaker. Cleats are an actual performance shoe. So people are constantly looking for the ultimate, you know, cleat with a carbon plate that will improve their speed or has a better tapered toe box so I can cut better. So you guys basically made the hardest version of a shoe that its outcome is performance-based instead of just personal opinion. Does it look good? Does it feel good? And from there, like, well, if we can 3D print a cleat that works and performs, we can 3D print anything. Is that the vibe?
Yeah. I mean, being able to control and manufacturing process is the key to this whole situation. Because when you rely on a factory to kind of make you the cleat bottom, they'll do it one way and they'll shape it one way, and you're stuck with what they deliver. For us, to build the shape of that cleat bottom, control how thick or thin it is, much heel stability you get. Change the aesthetics, the lines, the collar line, you know, the details. And, you know, it didn't really work so well.
What's the process of, I know you've walked me through it. You said about the foot scanning and stuff. I still haven't found a foot scanner here in Israel. Hopefully I'll go to the States soon. But what's the process of obtaining a cleat or shoe from you guys? If you can walk through our listeners and our viewers.
Sure. Right now, if you can find a foot scanner, that helps. On our site, we have a foot scanning portion. If you can't find a scanner, we've been looking at apps on the phone as well, but haven't had 100% success rate from any one app yet. We've kind of feel confident that someone's going to get it down really well, like foot body scanning apps, and that would make our process even a lot easier if you can do this from home and not have to ask somebody to go to a different location to find one of these scanners. But essentially, when we get your 3D scanned foot in, we're not even 100% confident that we can rely on just that alone, because every scanning company might have a slightly different way that it does it. So we also ask people to take a couple foot photos for us to double verify their foot length and their toe heights, because toe heights are super crucial to get a custom shoe to feel right. If that shoe is a little too scrunched or a little too loose, you feel it right away. So knowing people's toe heights and foot lengths kind of verifies those foot scans. After we get that information, we ask you for, like I said, your data, your height, weight, your shoe choices, what your sports are. And you also got to pick the colors of, I'm just going through the cleat, for example. You pick your parts of the cleat that you want. And after you give us all that information, we color up the cleat, send a picture of it back to you, as well as another print off for you to print at home. And what that is just like kind of like the outline of your foot. And if that looks like something that you can step on at home, and that's the shape of your shoe, it gives us that last verification point that, whoa, my foot's not hanging over, or this isn't oversized. It looks like it's going to fit right. And from that point, if we're checked on the size and the colors, we go to printing. And, you know, that printing parts can take 2 to 3 days. Actually putting shoes together is another day. So right now we're making about 2 pairs a week. We're catching up on some of the pre-orders that came in over the last 6 to 9 months at the moment.
Okay. And what are the price ranges of the product you're selling? I understand it can differ based on what type of cleat you're making.
Yeah, it's a unique situation in that our pricing kind of differs based on your foot size right now. I mean, a mass manufacturer, Nike, Adidas, and them, they put all that money into whether you're buying a size 5 or a size 18, you know, being the same price, they calculate that stuff in. For us, making shoes one at a time, it changes our process, because a bigger shoe means longer print times, more material. So we end up having to charge more to recompensate. But our cleats will start at like $545, I believe. That's for the smaller sizes. And then it depends on you if you choose to have toe spacers come with this package. If you choose to have the metatarsal pads, we have custom insoles that house metatarsal pads. So you can kind of interchange some of these parts to have more or less thickness. You can just make it flush so you don't feel it at all. We actually found some great advantages to having the metatarsal pads in while playing, to have a little less slip, a little more arch activation, a little more toe grab. But this is an added cost to the part of our shoes. We're trying to say we want to offer the healthiest product out there, but you can choose to not do the metatarsal pads. You can choose to not do the toe spacers, and it can bring the price down. But if you order our largest size shoe and have all the parts and bells and whistles with it, I think it's like $1,200 or $1,300.
Mm-hmm. So the way I see it is that people are constantly willing to pay, especially competitive athletes, you know, who are signing $1 million contracts to play their sport. They're going to super be down, like anything that's going to give them the slightest performance boost. Like I was talking to you guys about the other time, people are willing to pay $200 for carbon insoles, which may or may not do much when it comes to speed development. And even if they do give a 0.1% increase, you can also get a 50% increase in speed by training, by working out. So like I'm saying, people are always looking for the shortcut. But when a random dude, let's just call it the term NARP. It's a term I use when I train athletes, non-athletic regular person. It's not a derogatory term. It's just like a term for non-athletes among us. I think all of us three are not NARPs, or at least we aspire to not be. So they're gonna wiggle their eyebrows at the price, just the way it is. You know, people value, they'll buy weed, they'll buy alcohol, they'll buy whatever for their money, but they won't value good product. So what would be your response to them? When I'll say to my athletes, let's say, who are not inherently professional athletes, they're not getting paid $50 million a year, but they do play for their countries for not much money. They might not even get paid at all. What's the claim? Like, how do we justify the cost, basically? I'm not saying this in a derogatory way. Like, I totally value your product, but I'm trying to, like, play devil's advocate for a second.
Sure. I mean, our hope right now isn't that we're charging these prices because we're trying to make profit and get rich and start this big company. Really, our motivation is to just find product that fits people and helps us grow. We would love everybody in the world to have a pair of our shoes at the end of the day. But we do realize that the price is a huge challenge, especially to the average athlete. Where we're at with the pricing is kind of where we have to be at in order to sustain what we're doing as a business, because it's hard to compare what our prices are compared to your average Adidas cleat. Your average Adidas cleat is made the same way, size 9, 100,000 times the same day. So you have a process where someone's just passing it, whereas we're spending days just looking at one person's foot to analyze their shape, to make every part perfect. And I think a lot of the comments that we get through social media, at least on the negative side, is just our pricing. And I think that's part of what I'm glad we're able to talk about this, because it's a hard thing to compare to your average cleat for the process that you're going to get from us. So I think, like you said, an elite level athlete gets it. The NARPs don't get it as much, and they more or less are just going to complain that our shoes are expensive and, oh, that might only last one season. How could I ever invest in that? And we hear it, and we do hope that someday our shoes maybe will have a healthier price point. Maybe we do just make a minimal cleat at some point in the future that's size 9, size 10, and not custom, and it's a $300 version versus a $600 version. We've floated these ideas for a while, but where we're at with just how small our team is and what we're focusing on, we kind of have to be in the lane that we're at. And it's a unique lane. It's a niche lane. But, I mean, if we can appeal to the elite-level athletes and eventually find a few more professional-level soccer players, rugby players around the world who vouch for our product, I think it'll help us in the future find better ways to get more shoes to people.
So I can add a bullet point to kind of, I don't want to say defend the cost, but let's just say justify the cost. You are both what I would call fashion consultants. Like, people can come to you and say, hey, Chad, I want to make a shoe or a barefoot shoe. You'll be charging $500 an hour to consult with them. And that's just an hourly fee. What you're saying to me now is that we're not mass producing your shoe. So it's for sure not like click of a button, boom, it gets shipped to you automatic Amazon. We're spending days, if not hours and hours, making your cleat. So on the flip side, obviously, if a cleat costs $10,000, it's likely no one would buy it. But the hours you're putting into the shoe are actually far less. The price you're charging is actually far less than what the value of your knowledge, education, and time is worth. Just like putting it in perspective for all the people listening who are listening now and for the recording. And once again, I'm someone who I value money, I value time, I value education. But as an educator, I value education the most. So like I will pay $500 to get a one-on-one session with the world's greatest performance coach to learn from it, right? Like, but that's not everyone's mindset. We do have some questions from the crowd / myself. Question number one is, are you interested? You kind of touched upon it. Are you interested in mass producing this, or are you going to always keep it custom fits?
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I think we both want to get more shoes on people in the future. And I know that might be a more affordable way to do that is to mass produce. But it's a whole different route for us because then you're, like I said, you're relying on a factory to produce parts for you. There aren't a lot of great factories that we've found in America that will produce cleat bottoms, you know, affordably. So we're hopeful.
I want to speak to that too just a bit because, you know, the 3D printers that I had like 10 years ago are, you know, nothing compared to what you can buy nowadays. So, you know, in the future, I think the manufacturing technology, I think the way we want to invest in it is in technology that allows us to stay custom, but keep driving the cost down. And I think that as 3D printing technology improves and other sort of mass produced, but customized at the same time, like those sort of technologies, I think we'll be looking at and trying to invest in, and hopefully we can, you know, provide the same level of performance and fit, but drive the cost down. I would think that that's coming, but you know, it takes time to develop these technologies. So.
So as technology advances, the cost will go down even while keeping the custom fit, like even not mass producing it.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, just based on what we've seen, what I've seen in the 3D printing technology over the years, I mean, the new materials, the new printers, like there's always new stuff coming out every year, and the process gets more efficient. You get ability to make different types of products because of the materials. So the materials get more durable. There's just constant progress there. So, I'm excited about that area of the technology that we use. I think that it's going to be improving over time.
Nice. So the next question is from Nature Athletics. If you've heard of him, he's also making a minimalist cleat and basketball sneaker. I'm sure you guys corresponded. So he was asking about the metatarsal pads, and he was wondering about studies and just what their actual role is in both the cleat and foot performance. And this is something that I'm not as familiar with either because I've never used them. You mentioned them briefly before, but I would love to hear more about like what their function is, let's say for athletes on the field and for just regular dude and dudettes.
So when I worked with a podiatrist a while back, it was new to me as well. And it's really all about the placement. I just posted one of our last posts on Instagram, kind of does a little explanation for this.
Sweet.
I might not be saying this perfectly, but essentially in the bottom of your foot, you have a cavity of space.
Mm-hmm.
And we're essentially putting our feet into flat shoes that can slide around, your foot can move around. Now, when we have a custom fit shoe that fits you well, that happens a little bit less. But what we find from wearing conventional footwear for most of your life, when shoes are super stiff underneath and you don't get arch activation, you're not using your arch anymore while wearing your shoes. So when you're barefoot and you're getting into a short foot position, you're getting into a stronger foot, that's great. You get into a stiff shoe, your basketball shoes or your soccer cleats, your arches do less work because in your mind, there's no nerve sensation that says, I need to activate my foot to do this as much. The shoe's doing that work for you. So with a metatarsal pad, it kind of fills that gap back up. It gives you a little bit of a lift. It's foam, so it's soft. It's not a hard, stiff piece. And it gives your nerve receptors the idea that there's some shape underneath your foot where you have that. And it kind of gets you a little bit up into that short foot position. It's not for everybody. I found over the past, when we prescribed metatarsal pads to people, 75% of people loved them. 25% of people just said they're uncomfortable. I don't like them. And so with that knowledge, I know that everybody's different. Everybody's finicky with their feet and what feels good. So that's why we offer the option of just putting a flat piece. So
beautiful.
It comes with different thicknesses. So you can put a higher domed foam piece in there, or you can put a flat piece if you don't like it. And there's two other advantages that I found with metatarsal pads is when you're flat inside your shoe, and now you have this kind of foam shape that lifts up, your toes inherently will go down a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You get a little bit more balance and a grip sensation inside your shoe versus being flat. The other thing is when you're flat inside a shoe that often has toe spring, your toes are up in the air and your arch is doing the opposite shape. So you're always used to being in a shoe doing this motion versus being in a shoe in this motion, which is what we want, to have a stronger foot. So we kind of just give you it's more like a nudge. The metatarsal pads are just like a nudge to remind you to use your foot a little bit more, use your arch a little bit more, you know, activate your foot more. And for me, I think one thing it also gives me advantage of, it might be the same for the cleat in a basketball shoe, is there's a lot of movement left and right. And there's a turf toe, you know, when you're sliding too far inside
the shoe,
and you get your toes in the front. It's just more shape underneath the shoe to keep you from sliding around a perfectly flat, smooth sock liner. And, you know, with our insoles, it's also, you know, with the metatarsal pad shape, we have just a texture. I don't know how easily you can see that. And those texture bumps might actually feel uncomfortable to your hand, but on your foot, it actually just keeps you solid in one space and you're not sliding around on the shoe.
Right. So what I'm hearing is that it can be very, very useful for beginners and even intermediate people who struggle to activate the arch properly. It gives you that nudge. So it can lead to greater arch activation in beginners, whereas advanced barefooters, I think we can make up that term, who know how to activate their arch properly may or may not need that and might actually find it a little bit too supportive or a little bit annoying. The second advantage, once again, I'm just reflecting back on what you said, is that athletes who, once again, their main goal is performance. And what you guys are doing is saying, what if I can maximize their performance without harming their feet, which is against the narrative of what everyone else has been doing. You're saying without damaging their feet, I can add a little bit more foot stability, especially lateral stability by having something under the arch without taking away from
the under the arch, which is a little bit of the misleading part. You know, under the arch would be over here on this medial side and propping up your arch. And that's really not what we want to do, is prop your arch up. It's more right in that middle space of your foot where you just have like an empty cavity of just fascia.
So less sliding, more lateral stability. And I that's actually what I was clarifying, because the way I initially understood it a few minutes ago was like, it sounds kind of like a supportive insole, right? Yeah. Now you're saying, no, it's actually not sitting by the arch. It's sitting in the middle just to provide less sliding in the shoe. And once again, as an athlete who plays 7 to 11 sports a week, I can testify that no matter what I play in, I normally play barefoot whenever I can, but I can't always. So I slide a lot in the shoes and I still slip. And I'm talking about like all the barefoot cleat alternatives I've tried. I slip, I slide, and it's not fun. So I'll size down, but the second I size down in the cleat, and I'm sure a lot of people watching this resonate with this. If you're sizing down, you're kind of defeating the purpose of a barefoot. Like the second your toes and feet are smushed, you're getting the problem of smushing your feet when performing, and that can lead to all sorts of pain. The next question I had, and this is for me, is when it comes to sole thickness. So I'll just give the preclaimer and then we can like wrap up soon to all those listening. So like when it comes to the characteristics of barefoot shoes, I think that sole thickness is very individual to the shoe. Some people need thinner, some people need thicker, a basketball shoe. Like once again, I think that you should be able to play basketball barefoot. I think you should be able to play rugby barefoot eventually, but it may take 15 years to get to there. And people who want to play pro sport are not going to do that work to get to play basketball barefoot. And obviously there's also the risk of getting stepped on and, you know, other things. And also I know I'm tangenting a bit, but I played ultimate frisbee barefoot and with barefoot style cleats. I played rugby and flag football barefoot and with barefoot style cleats. And no doubt I'm performing better with cleats on because I'm changing direction better. I'm able to dig into the floor better. And it's a world of a difference. So like the cleat is a necessary piece of equipment. But now the question is, how thick do I want that piece of equipment? So I'm not going to talk about vertical dominant sports, because I know like the jumping and landing, even though I slightly disagree with that narrative, like almost every single basketball player I've met is like, what? You can't play in barefoot shoes. You're going to hurt your knees. I'll be like, why don't you just make your knees resilient so that you can play barefoot? And then if you need to play in your shoes for basketball, do it. But that's not what I'm trying to get at. I'm trying to get at non-jumping sports, like, you know, football, frisbee, rugby, where you may jump or two, but it's more of a speed and agility and reactive sport. So how thick are we talking? Because you mentioned the insoles, which is obviously going to add thickness. Like, what have you seen as more advantages? Very thin, medium thickness, thicker thickness?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that relates to also the stiffness of the plate, right? So And this is what Chad was sort of talking about earlier, that we adjust the thicknesses of our insoles, the thickness of our cleat plate, based on a person's weight and their foot strength level. So if someone has got that strong foot and, you know, they're like, for you, Sean, like, we would probably give you about the thinnest cleat that we'd be comfortable in terms of the durability, right? Because if you go so thin that there's no material and just the studs, it's not going to hold up under those, like, that bit of torsion and the hard cuts. So there's a limit to how thin you can go for durability's sake. But once a person has the foot strength, yeah, we want you as close to the ground. We want that flexible plate where it's going to move pretty much in all the ways that your foot can. But, you know, someone who's used to playing in an Adidas or Nike their whole lives and then they switch to our stuff, we wouldn't really want to give them that, because there's a whole bunch of sort of like neurological training you have to be able to use your foot in those sharp movements that they're not going to have, and they potentially would get injured in that shoe, roll their ankle or whatever. So, we're trying to dial it into the person, and ideally the goal would be to get to that thinnest possible, you know, but, like, and we also make our shoes or the cleats with the, like, a leather kind of top cloth over the cleat, so you can just take the insole out. Like, the insole basically on the thinnest level just becomes something that can house the metatarsal pads. So, like, if you don't like the metatarsal pads and you want to go thin as possible, you just take the insole out and you have even, like, maybe 2 mil less thickness there. And now you're really, like, as close to the ground as possible. And, yeah, I think for you, like that seems like probably where you might want to go. For the average person just getting into it, it would have some more thickness and have a little more insole. The plate would be a little thicker, it'd be a little stiffer. But, yeah, that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, well, for all those listening out there, I appreciate you giving me as the example. I'm fairly excited about trying it. I'm not a good example for the world because are usually barefoot runners or in the gym barefoot or to an extreme, like walk everywhere barefoot. I also play, like, change direction sports barefoot. So, like, there's a certain foot resilience that I can play, like, 7 hours of Ultimate Frisbee barefoot, where everyone else around me is, like, spraining their ankle. And that's just because I've really, really earned the right to do that. So, like, don't start, for those listening, don't start too thin. Like strengthen your feet, prioritize your feet health, your foot health and your performance, and then use the shoe as a tool. The next thing I wanted to ask is about sole rigidness. So for those who understand, like, basic performance, something we try to, I'm not talking about the shoe, I'm talking about the feet. The stiffer our ankle and calf can be, and the more elastic it can be, the better we'll jump and run. So, like, the stronger my calf can be, the stronger I can push into the floor, and then I'll be able to run faster. So for those listening, let's say running on, like, a trampoline versus running on, like, a concrete or very hard surface versus running on grass or running on soft mud. So I've noticed when I did the fun cleat experiment I did last month, where I compared, like, 4 different brands that kind of offer cleat alternatives, but they're not true cleat alternatives, but they have, like, you know, a rugged bottom that kind of does the job for change direction sports. And then I wore my old Under Armour cleats I used to wear for tackle football, and they felt like poison. Like, they were so rigid and so stiff, I didn't know how to run in them. Like, in the video, you see me, like, tiptoeing on them. So I was obviously doing a little bit of theatrics, but I really was like, I don't know how to run in these. So how do we create how rigid, like, I saw you bent the shoe. I don't know if that was the feet of the shoe, but are you making any stiffness in the sole for performance perhaps needs, or are you keeping it super flexible? Are you having a medium?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of that data that we want to collect from people. And even if you tell us you have amazing foot strength like yourself, but you realize that a super minimal shoe might not give you the performance that you want, and you kind of liked where your older Adidas and Nikes were because they had stiffness to them, we kind of can meet you halfway. So just to kind of explain, like, we keep our flexible plates flexible so they move with your foot, and it's a plate that we add inside. that determines how much stiffness you get with your shoes. So we kind of put these parts together to give you your engineered, I guess, shoes, you know?
That's genius. Can that plate be removed?
Not after we finish the shoes. It's all kind of pieced into one.
Got it. So my last question for me, and then I did see an important comment that I wanted to address, and if you guys had any questions from your followers or just stuff we can chat about performance-wise, I'm more than happy to. So when it comes to the difference between sports, so like I'll just give me as an example. So I play Ultimate Frisbee on a professional level. I play flag football on a semi-pro level. I play tackle football. I play rugby. Then I do other sports like tennis and basketball and slackline and stuff that don't always require shoes. But what would be the difference between so tomorrow I'm going softball. I'll play barefoot unless the grass is really muddy, in which case I wear the Vivo Barefoot Esque Tempest, which once again is not so much needed because baseball doesn't have that much change of direction. But I notice when I'm, you know, sprinting the bases and I try to run fast because that's what I do, performance coach, I fall. When you're sprinting full speed and rounding a base, if you're not wearing a cleat, you'll likely trip on your face, and that's not so good if you're a competitive and trying to win even in a casual game. So what's the difference between like a baseball cleat, a frisbee cleat, a lacrosse cleat, a soccer cleat, a tackle football cleat from your guys' perspective when it comes to the studs and the traction they're giving?
Yeah. Well, so we literally just actually added this to our website where we're asking people what sport they're playing. And we're basically building it out right now. So, like, we want to hear from high-level athletes in those sports and, you know, get their feedback about what it is about stud pattern or the thickness of the upper or, you know, certain features of the upper that they like. And, you know, right now it's pretty basic. Like the football and rugby cleat are probably going to have a little more foam liner, a little more cushion. The likelihood that you get stepped on in those sports is just, you know, probably higher. Yep. And the weight of the person stepping on you is probably higher. So
absolutely,
that's like a starting point. And the baseball shoe, you know, maybe it's a little bit more of a protective cover over the toe cap. There's a lot more kind of like dragging of the toe when you're hitting or if you're pitching, throwing, whatever like that. So, I mean, right now there's like minor ideas for slight adjustments. But part of putting that drop down on our website was so that we could kind of interact and learn from the customers that are playing the different sports, because, you know, Chad and I are pretty sport specific, me being soccer, him and basketball. Like, we don't have the breadth of knowledge in the other sports. So we're kind of looking to customers to help educate us a little bit on what they think are like the key features in their sport. So yeah, short answer is we don't have like very specific things set up yet, but we're kind of looking to learn,
you know. And sweet. Overall, arching, we always just try to keep in mind it's a minimal style cleat. So we're not trying to just make you another baseball cleat because you liked one from Nike, and we want to try to make it close to that because Nike doesn't offer that cleat anymore. Like, we're still always going to try to make you the more minimal side of what you're used to, just as a code of ethics here.
So I've tried to play rugby and tackle football. I didn't play in a game. Actually, played in the game. I played in rugby, a full-on rugby game, rugby sevens, in my Vivo Barefoot Soft Ground. It doesn't have amazing traction, but it does the job because I just wasn't willing to put on my old cleats again. I wasn't willing to sacrifice my foot health for a sport that doesn't, you know, it's not like my professional sport. It's a local club game. And they got stepped on. And the person I played against ripped the cleat in half. Like, the lace and the whole upper of the Vivo Barefoot just tore in half. So I got it repaired. But then I also said, okay, I'm not doing this again. Then I tried to play tackle football in the Vivo Barefoot Soft Ground as well, which you're probably familiar with. Yes, it's the Vivo Barefoot model.
Yeah.
It's instead of the, you're familiar. Okay, so there's FGs, SGs. It's like a cleat. They've upgraded like Tempest and all sorts of really cool, much grippier soles since then. So I've upgraded to the S Tempest and I got stepped on. I'm playing linebacker or defensive end. You're familiar with tackle football. I know it's not your sport. You're going to get stepped on and it's going to hurt. And if I can't play my sport because of the small logistical thing that I'm going to get cleated really hard to the point of pain, then it's not realistic or sustainable for people. Since then I've switched to the different Vivo shoe, which I wear. I try to play barefoot. When I can't play barefoot, I wear it. And it's good, does the job, but it's not it's not what I'm looking for, because the toe box, I sized down one. I went from my regular 42 to 41. Otherwise, as you said before, tons of lateral slipping. So like I really lose lateral stability. In like we're talking the Vivo Decon, the Vivo Tempest, I'm slipping. So I sized down, but then when I sized down, my feet hurt. Like I literally notice after about, I think 7 years of only wearing barefoot shoes or only playing barefoot, that after wearing these slightly small minimalist shoes, just like half a size smaller than me, my big toe's actually getting pushed in again. And this is after like swearing off barefoot shoes. So like, because I just started playing Ultimate Frisbee professionally again. So like, it's crazy to see the difference in performance and how my arch starting to hurt again from a barefoot shoe. Like this, the Vivo Tempest, so it has a quite of a rigid sole. It doesn't have a rigid sole, but compared to barefoot or other shoes, it's rigid. So my arch hurts again, my big toe's pushed in again, and that's from a barefoot shoe that doesn't fit me perfectly. So I guess that just reinforces your message of what you're saying, that how important it is to have that custom fit. I tried taking the insula without the insula. I like it better because I'm closer to the ground, but it's just, it hurts. You know, the arch hurts. Like I now treat even my barefoot shoes as a cast. So like I'll mobilize my feet, toes, and ankles before I play a game of Ultimate Frisbee or flag football. And then I'll again mobilize my feet, toes, and ankles after a game. And I highly suggest that for anybody wearing any type of cleat, barefoot or not. Someone said something really important in the comments, and I kind of want to jump in that for a second, that concrete is not natural. It's not a natural surface. And yes, that's correct. Concrete is not is a man-made surface. It's not God-made. But I also believe that artificial turf is not natural either. And this is just my opinion. You guys can chime in as well. And that if we build our bodies to be resilient, assuming that, you know, you don't have to believe in God to this concept, but assuming that our bodies are God-made, we can build our body to tolerate and perform in any man-made texture. So yes, jumping on concrete 5,000 times might not be so good for you, but if you build up your body strong enough, then you should be able to withstand any texture in any terrain. And I've proven that by running barefoot half marathons on concrete. Like, it's not a bad thing. He's specifically referring to the basketball dilemma we have, where every basketball player, this is someone in the comments, will come to us and be like, it's bad to jump barefoot, it's bad to jump minimalist shoes. I think it's fine within reason. Are you playing a professional sport? Are you rolling around with the boys, you know, on a weekend? Those are my thoughts. And that's probably one of the biggest, like, negative comments I get on my kind of posts. I'm sure you hear that as well.
Yeah, I mean, just in response to that, like on a basketball shoe, I know that, like, if I tried wearing a minimal shoe and go and play basketball, there's some foot pain that comes in pretty quick because there's just so much force that slaps down on a hard, flat surface, whether it's a hardwood or concrete. But what we've still found is that there's a formula of a minimal shoe that can remain flexible as long as you're held in there with, like, a nice heel counter. The cushioning aspect should be as just minimal as you need it. And I say that because I can play basketball barefoot, but I'm going to be slower because I'm having to absorb the forces of jumping and landing and squatting down into it and then changing direction versus landing stiff-legged and straight and then going, which is what we're used to being able to do with our Nikes and Adidas. And, I mean, that's, I think, where a lot of injury cases come into play, is that we rely on the shoe and then we put our bodies in a position that's not ready for that strength-wise. So for our basketball shoe, I guess, just for instance, it's about giving you enough cushion that you can still land and spring back up and do a quick jump without that foot slap pain. And everybody's formula is going to be different based on your foot strength and your weight. So, like, for example, this is the prototype that I made for myself. It's super thin overall, but the shoe, you know, there's no basketball shoes that can do that. But because there's a stiffness kind of in the middle and there's a stiffness back here, I'm held on top of this shoe, so I'm not flying around. In a minimal running shoe, if I was to play basketball, I would slop over the sides. But we have reinforcement that keeps you from doing that and just enough cushion underneath to cushion the blows from jumping a bunch of times. Still in refinement, but it's a valid point of, it's not comfortable jumping on concrete repeatedly, but we're trying to meet you somewhere, you know, on your journey.
Right. I think I'm going to even add to that. Like, I don't suggest playing basketball barefoot, although if, like, you want to, go for it, do your thing. I think that your foot, ankle, knee, and hip complex should have the ability to absorb force barefoot. Now, that doesn't mean 5,000 times. Once you've earned that right and know it absorbs force properly, then you can put on a shoe because your body now knows how to absorb it. You can't rely on the thickness of the cushion of the shoe to absorb the force for you. And you certainly can't rely on too thick of a shoe, because too thick of a shoe will lead to instability. And there's a people why in Ultimate Frisbee, people are spraying their ankles around me because they're playing with Hokas. Like, what do you expect? You're running around in marshmallows. I'm sorry, I'm bashing Hoka. I hope the Hoka gods forgive me. The next two comments that I saw, that there's like, I think stuff that like a lot of our fan base speaks about. So someone asked, can you show how grippy the upper is? I don't know if I fully understood that question. Grippy the upper.
Yeah.
Obviously. Yes. Yeah. How grippy the upper is. What does he mean by that? I'm not sure, but you'll show the time.
I mean, on a soccer cleat, like the grip on the upper is important if it's wet out and you're striking a ball.
Got it.
So, I mean, it's hard to communicate grip through a video, but if I just slide my finger along the upper, like it wants to kind of, it starts and stops. So there's grip just on my fingertips, if that makes sense. Like, it's not so slick that I'm just sliding along. I'm not really sure how else I can communicate that, but yeah, there's a different texture, this triangle black texture on the outside. That's our grippiest material, so that's what's giving you that little bit of extra grip around where you striking the ball.
Got it. So David, I hope that answered your question. Thanks for inquiring. So I'm assuming that cleat is what these either kicking sport like kickers in the NFL or soccer players are going to have, whereas a sport. Peace out, David. Thanks for asking. So in a sport that doesn't really require kicking, you probably wouldn't inherently use the sticky upper. Is that correct?
Yeah, you wouldn't need to. I mean, you could potentially use different materials that will give you, you know, maybe it's more foam or cushion if it's football, or yeah, it just depends on what sport, but you could interchange it with something that'd be more useful.
Got it. So another question I saw, I think this is the last of the questions. So in the comments, I apologize if I missed you, but it will try to respond after in the comments once I post it. Is someone said, can you show how rigid or, oh, here we go. Can you demonstrate the range of rigidness of the rock plates that you offer?
I just have an example here. We might be able to grab a few more.
I think we have the Silas one.
I mean, just so I guess you can get even a closer look at like what the piece is. There's actually flex grooves through the plate. So you're not just standing on a hard piece of plastic that's super rigid, like carbon fiber inserts. Like,
that's a good one.
Yep.
So yeah, there are some spots in the middle, so you can flex this thing in the middle. Whoa. But that stiffness is what helps keep the shoe from crumpling in your hand, which gives you a lack of performance. This has you can see how thin this is, but it's rigid enough to where you combine this with something that's super flexible. And when these two parts bond together, that's when you get the strength that makes this snappy now and gives you the performance.
Sweet. Here's the two, like one without and then one with. So these are literally like pretty much the same plate. This is it without the plate, and then this is it with it bonded inside.
Wow.
So it's still
flexible. It has some give. It has some give, but it's sensitive.
Yeah, it's kind of the middle road.
Got it. Definitely a much far superior to probably any standard Nike or Adidas or Under Armour cleat. The next question I have is just for me, and is, can I see what the upper would look like on a tackle football or rugby upper that like is a little bit stiffer if you're worried about being stepped on?
I can show you. So another unique aspect about the uppers of our cleats is the inside of it. We're not
so beautiful.
Gluing foam and protective layers. Like, we're actually 3D printing this texture that gives you some breathability. And for a soccer cleat, for example, there's a lot of flexibility in how this moves with your foot in the toe box. So you have a full range of motion. If you're playing rugby and you're saying that you don't want to get stepped on, we can simply reinforce the exterior of the shoe with more thickness. And we can even reinforce the interior of the shoe specifically for your needs.
Would that restrict any range of motion in the toes or affect the foot function in any manner?
I don't think so. I think it's, if you're just adding more stiffness in like the toe, the top of the shoe, it's still so flexible. By adding stiffness or thickness to this, it's just going to be a little thicker. It's still going to move with your foot fine, but it can protect you more. We're going for thinner toe boxes for soccer because we're trying to get the most feel out of the ball, you know, kick it. So there's a lot of fine tuning we can do on our end because we get to control every millimeter of thickness that we put throughout this.
Wow. Well, that's cool because once you were, I know this isn't necessarily like the realm you're diving into, but a steel toe boot is something that's very, very lacking in the minimalist world. There is one guy who does it, Gauchi Ninja. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but they run for like, I think a few $1,000s because he's custom making them. But I'm saying once you're 3D printing and modifying and making thickness, like you could probably make anything. Once you understand what the customer needs. Yeah. Okay, sweet. So I think I covered all the comments. So I'll tell you, it's just cool. You said you're basketball, he's soccer. So at a pro, once again, pro level, not the NFL. I very much would like that, but I'm not. I play frisbee, flag football, tackle football, rugby at semi-professional level for the country. I also coach that. When it comes to lining up guinea pigs for you, like people who can test. So I don't know what you consider pro sport because I think the highest level of sport in football is, let's say, the NFL, obviously, or in basketball, the NBA. I have athletes, both females and males, lined up more on the female side who play for their country. The highest level of lacrosse and the highest, like D1 level, and the highest level of flag football. So that could be fun if you need any testers there. And yeah, I'm looking forward to stuff. I'm looking forward to meeting you guys in person. Or where do you live? Where's your factory again, or office in this case?
We're in a small town in Washington State. It's on the West Coast, America. Hmm.
So yeah, I'm familiar. I mean, the Israeli joke, if you're bumping into Israelis, is like, "Oh, you are from California? You know my friend in New York?" You know, like they all like think it's one little country. But I don't have any West Coast plans, but I do plan on, I potentially maybe going to the States in February for my sister-in-law's, she's having a baby, and I may just make it to the West. So either way, looking forward to meeting you, looking forward to seeing the scan. Greatly appreciate your time. We have another question from David before we log off, and he says, does the breathability of the upper make your foot get wetter in wet conditions?
Yeah, I think he's talking about the holes. So they don't actually go all the way through the upper. The holes in the upper just are like channels that are connected, so no more water gets in. The shoe's waterproof through here, but it just allows better airflow inside the shoe. So to answer that question, your foot isn't going to get more wet. Actually, we found that our feet are like drier, less sweat with this setup than actually shoes like on the market right now.
That's cool. Okay, so any did anyone ask any questions on your end and your stories or things that you'd want to answer before we wrap up? Or do you have any questions for me? Or for Charlie, who's kind of been hanging out here with me for Kodo. Charlie, say hi.
Charlie.
He's been hanging out here with me for a while. So, yeah, any last thoughts, last questions, last stuff?
No, we'd love to host you if you make it out here. I think for people like yourself who understand foot health and shoe choices, you would geek out at our process and what we're doing. And we'd like to share what we're doing with people. So it would be cool. We also look forward just to making you a pair soon, so that you can test them out, give us some feedback. Because, I mean, we're not thinking everything is perfect what we're doing. So the more feedback we get from people who have tested as many different kinds of minimal cleats as you have, it's going to be valuable information for us as well. So we look forward to continuing to work with you.
Yes, I'm definitely, one of the reasons why I'm prioritizing the U.S. trip is so I can hopefully add this to the checklist. I do want to hit up the West Coast because I've never been there, never been to Cali. I have some colleagues I like to visit in L.A. and San Francisco. I know that they're not inherently close to Washington, but if I'm already on the West Coast, may as well, you know, check off everything. One more question from David. David's killing it today. Have you considered using more traditional materials like leather for the upper?
We have. It's less reliable for us because we don't have a source of materials that's constant. You know, we could go buy hides of leather from a store and make a cleat. I think we could achieve that. But then if the next person says, I want that same cleat 6 months from then, who's to say that that store has the same leather hides and has the same stretch in that leather hide, has the same thickness in that leather hide? So We can make custom bespoke one-off stuff for you. I feel like we don't focus on it because, again, it's not as repeatable of a process as what we're trying to hone in on with 3D printing.
It's funny you say that because almost every leather barefoot shoe company, like Carrots or Gauchy Ninja, or that most of their shoes are primarily made of leather, they have leather shortages and supply chain issues and changes in the make of the shoe because of the leather related issues, because leather is, like, you know, from a living product. Another question I just remembered that someone asked in my story was, how come bigger companies like Vivo Barefoot or whatever, Zero, didn't jump on this cleat opportunity yet? Because it's niche, but it's needed. Like, people are, you know, I can count thousands of people. I know that's not a lot, but barefoot shoe world, it is a lot.
My short answer would be is that from what we've learned over the last years, it's not an easy thing to just jump into. I think for Nike, Adidas, and anybody else who can just make a stiff cleat and it works for everybody, and then as opposed to the minimal brands who want to come in and potentially say, we're still a minimal brand, but we want to make a cleat, I think it's a huge challenge. Everybody, but piss off everybody at the same time. If you make a minimal cleat, right, I think it could piss people off and hurt people, and you're not satisfying a large group of people. You're satisfying a niche group of people that still doesn't satisfy, I think, that one person. Like, it's such a finicky kind of fit of a world if you're really trying to be minimal and with a cleat. And that's what we've just experienced, you know, firsthand, how many different iterations we've made until it feels right. And the next person that would try on that pair of shoes that feels perfect to me, it's going to feel completely different for that person. So to be able to mass produce a minimal cleat just seems like a daunting task, really.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely going to have an orgasm when I come meet you guys, or a footgasm, whatever, you know, whatever it is, when I come to your workshop. Looking forward to that. But I think that the biggest step for you, for us, for the barefoot world, is if we can get a pro team. Like, playing with these, like, imagine the Patriots, whatever, you know, the Saints, just all of them, or most of them, are playing in minimal style cleats, and we can see the performance gains from that, or not just the performance gains, but the lack of ACL injuries, yes, you know, the lack of sprained ankles. And I think that ties hand in hand, because they're now in barefoot cleats, like, foot health is going to be a thing. That's going to be it. And then other teams are going to jump on the opportunity. And then, because we all love our athletes, regular people are going to be like, hey, I should do this too. In fact, that's what's – yeah, there we go. Speed Sports Coach, we will. That's what's been happening. Like, guys like Knees Over Toes Guy and Squat University, you have like 2 million followers, are preaching this barefoot thing. And all of a sudden, thousands of athletes around the world are ditching their conventional shoes and changing over. So I think that, like, we're making changes, and all three of us are part of something greater. And we'll see what the future brings. And I'm sorry I made you sit so long, because I was moving around the whole time.
That's all good. We got to get up and move around. But hey, it's part of our process, definitely, too. Like, we ourselves still try to stay mobile and athletic and work out daily, because we want to preach what we, you know, make for everybody as well.
Practice what you preach. Yeah. Absolutely. I think every barefoot educator has to be practice what he preaches. So that's all for the night, I believe. Thank you so much for making this happen. I appreciate your patience, your dedication, your love, and the ability to make round two. What's going to happen now is I'm going to publish this on my Barefoot Shoe Review grid and on my Barefoot Athlete grid, and put it up as a podcast on Spotify and the Cold Feet Podcast. So we'll hopefully get this message out to as many people as possible. We'll discuss some logistics after you send me some pictures, whatever, so I can use it for the podcast covers. But other than that, have an amazing night or day, or whatever time it is for you. Here it's just about 9 p.m.
Yeah.
Oh, start of the day. So it's just about 9 p.m. Gonna have some dinner. Had a pretty long training day, but I'm so happy this happened. And I'm super stoked to meet you guys, work with you guys, make whatever collaborations the future will bring. I'm excited about it.
Right on, Sean. We look forward to working with you.
Very much. Very much so. And I hope we were able to bring the message to people around the world. So have an amazing day, and enjoy your weekend.
Thanks.
Have a good one.
See you, Sean.
Bye-bye. See ya.
Hey, I'm Sean, and I'm the Barefoot Athlete. And I want to welcome you on this 6-week Barefoot Transition course. 2.5 years ago, we started developing this course, and we wanted it to be 12 months long. Why 12 months? Because we felt that if you just spent dozens of years in cushioned shoes, you can't transition that quickly. realizing that 12 months is not sustainable, we shortened it to 6 weeks. And in these 6 weeks, you're going to dive into foot, knee, ankle, hip, shoulder mobility. You're going to dive into calf, ankle, knee, hip strengthening. You're going to learn how to take care of your feet, how to release them with tons of soft tissue work. After the first phase is over, after the 3 weeks are done, your pain is gone. Your knees, your hips, your feet are feeling great, ready to rumble. Move on to the advanced stage. We learn how to land. We learn how to jump. We learn how to produce force and absorb force. Every single week is action-packed with play, fun, challenges to challenge yourself, your friends, your loved ones, and your community. Tons of strengthening, tons of footwork, and we can guarantee you that in 6 weeks' time, you will be much, much closer to being able to fully love life and live life in minimalist footwear. And the best part of it all, you're not limited to 6 weeks. So if you want to go back and repeat a phase, you're more than welcome to. So let's go, come along, and enjoy the course.